Welcome to the IT Connect podcast, a movement to connect minority students with professionals in the IT industry and therefore bridge the diversity gap in technology. Let me now introduce our guest speaker for today, who I'm really excited to have on this call. So Mr. Darnell Williams is currently a Salesforce application developer who works for IBM. He is certified in the Salesforce platform development as an admin and developer. He graduated from Grambling State University in 2017. With a double major, electronics engineering technology and mathematics and physics. During his Grambling career, he served as the president of NSBE, as well as vice president of the Math and Computer Science Club. Darnell has done internships with Apple and Centrelink and has been a phenomenal talent phenom, I'll call him, when it comes to the academic technology space. So please join me in welcoming Darnell Williams to the IT Connect podcast. Darnell, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me.
Man, we're glad to have you here. So, Donald, we're going to get right to it. In your bio, I mentioned that you were a Salesforce developer. So my very first question for you, Donald, is I call it a snapshot of today. So just tell us, what is your role at IBM and what exactly that you do?
Okay, so as Tazim said, a Salesforce platform developer. And basically, what I do is develop and deploy solutions for various clients. And that is it in a nutshell. So in certain instances, I have to create custom interfaces. I'm using the programmatic capabilities of the Lightning platform. So that's like using Apex. That's what we use to code more on the back end. Or I'm using JavaScript and HTML, CSS for styling when doing stuff on the front end.
Okay, so you mentioned Apex, HTML. So I think those of us who, I guess most of these guys have an idea of what that is. I wasn't familiar with Apex that much. Could you tell us just a little bit more about what exactly Apex is for someone who's probably never heard it before?
Okay, so Apex is kind of like the language that Salesforce uses more like on the back end. It is 95 to 98% Java. So if you have a background in Java and you understand the Java syntax, it's exactly the same, just with one or two little tidbits added behind there.
Okay, and what would a typical day be like for you in this role with IBM?
Okay, so we work in the Agile Scrum methodology. So basically, we work in, well, on the last two projects I worked on, we've worked in 3-week sprints, and in Agile, you do 2 to 4 week sprints, usually more like two weeks. So a day-to-day would be you start off in the morning, you have a meeting with your team, basically talk about, you know, what you have done the previous day, what you plan on doing for that day, as well as, you know, talk about any blockers that you may be experiencing that's hindering your progress. So after you have your daily stand-up, that's what we call them, you just go in and you start doing work. So you may have, let's say, user stories. You have a bunch of different user stories that you select. Maybe you've been working on one already. It entails a lot of thinking. First of all, you have to think of, hey, this client has a problem. They put it down in different user stories, and you have to identify the problem in that user story and find out the best way of, you know, solving that problem. So that's all I do all day, problem solve. On this project, because the client does not want to deal with maintaining code so much, they want us to take more of a declarative approach. That means like using more of the drag and drop functionalities of the Salesforce platform, because Salesforce also allows you to build solutions as quickly as possible and minimize the amount of code that you have to use. But there are instances where a solution that the client requests needs some custom logic or some custom code that's not already pre-built. So on this project, I do more declarative programming, but it can easily jump up to Apex code and you can really get into the nitty-gritty of actually writing a lot of code.
Man, that's some good stuff, Donald. And I like that you called out the Agile framework. So for you guys, The Agile methodology is something you're going to hear a lot about if you haven't heard it yet. It's been around for a while, but it's getting some more momentum. I guess I just ask a follow-up question, Daniel. I guess, what was it like for you kind of first getting exposed to the Agile framework? And just tell us a little bit more about that framework. I know you call out a few things like the stories and the sprints, but just give us a little bit more on how you first started. And if it was an easy learning curve getting into Agile, having not really done it at all, probably in college.
No, I had never done it before, but I did a lot of research. And that's one thing that we may talk about more as we move on for the podcast, but just being prepared, you know, it's always good to be prepared. So the Agile framework, it's an iterative process, right? So usually before we had like the waterfall process where you have a project and you look at it from start to end, and you go through that entire process. In Agile, yes, you have a project plan, but you also break it up into smaller, more bite-sized pieces called sprints. And as you go day by day, for example, we have the daily stand-up. You kind of see your progress, where you are, and then you adjust, and it's more flexible. So after this sprint, realize, hey, we're expecting to do 10% of the project, realize we did 15%, then we can kind of micromanage and plan accordingly and change things. So Agile, as the name suggests, just makes you, you know, more flexible, more agile, so that you can better go through the development cycle and ensure that you deliver. So you can notice that, hey, you're a little behind. Hey, we need to do this and that. We're a little ahead. Okay, maybe we can spend some more time on testing and so on and so forth.
That's great, Donald. And guys, I hope you guys, again, we'll be recording this so you could go back and listen to it. But I think that is, you know, some real value for aspiring, you know, technology students, right? Because again, what he described was the waterfall model, where you kind of had your requirements up front, where here's what we want to build. We have what, X number of months to build it. And we're just going from start to end, as he mentioned. But again, things change daily, man, in the technology world. I mean, there's always change. And I think it's, again, definitely, if you guys did one thing out of this session so far, be sure to just research more about the Agile framework versus the waterfall framework and understand how that movement is impacting the technology landscape and the job landscape as well. Because I mean, I see a lot of job descriptions where that is a preference for you to be at least familiar with the Agile methodology. So thank you very much for that, Daniel. So we're going to move into a bit of a back in time and talk about your history a little bit. I'm sure anyone who heard you speak will say, okay, I hear an accent. So we'll get into that. So Daniel, I'm going to ask you what I believe is the hardest question in any job interview. Tell me about yourself and where you're from.
Well, I grew up on the beautiful island of Dominica. Dylan is also from Dominica. We're actually from the same community. Knew each other growing up and all of that. So growing up, I always love nature and I love tech. That's the two things that I've kind of been around. And I have to thank my parents for that, because I remember as young as 6 years old, it was around 97, 96, maybe I was five. 96, 97. That's when my parents kind of bought also our first computer. We had a computer in Windows 95. It was very expensive. I didn't really understand, you know, money and all those things at the time. It's only after I realized, oh, they really invested a lot in us. So having that first computer, it was just mind-blowing. You know, it was intriguing. On my LinkedIn, I said that, if you look up my LinkedIn profile, I said that my first electric shock was what kind of sparked my interest in tech. That also played a role in me playing around with stuff. Was fortunate that, you know, it wasn't worse, but I've just always been surrounded by tech, and also my siblings. Some of my siblings are engineers. They work in the medical field. I have cousins, other family members who are either, you know, doctors and all that stuff. So I've always been exposed to technology and tech, even from a very young age. And as a kid, I would always have like just crazy conversations with like my parents and my brothers, and about all types of things, like going to the moon and, you know, different tech and planes and just everything you could think of. So I'll say my family had a very big impact on me choosing this field and this path.
I love it, man. Nature and technology. And as you were describing the impact your parents had, I almost felt like, you know, you start to sound like Elon Musk a little bit, you know, like the parents put that incubator, which allowed you to really get that creativity. And that's something I want to call out, because I think parents, especially, that's something they have to be conscious about, putting that environment for your children, or even your niece or your nephew. And that's something I'm actually trying to get more into. How do we cultivate that environment? So from early, we spark that curiosity where people are like, you know what, this is interesting to me. How does this work? And hopefully you don't have to get shocked. but hopefully we could get to doing that. So I want to get into, you know, how you got from the beautiful nature island of Dominica to Gremlin. Okay. So let's now move on to Darnell. Tell us about your decision to leave the beautiful nature isle of Dominica to go to lovely Louisiana to get a bachelor's degree.
Well, it was actually an easy decision, way easier than you may think, because I was in Dominica and I wanted to further my education. I'd done 2 years of schooling back home. And there was actually a stop before I came to Louisiana. I actually went to Morocco for 2 years, where I got a chance to, you know, kind of learn some French, learn a little bit of Arabic. And let's just say after 2 years, things were not the path to get where I wanted to get to. It wasn't how I envisioned it. So right there, I decided to apply for Grambling. And in the space of like just that summer, I went to get my visa, do all of that stuff. And then I went to Grambling in 2013. So international students talk about a culture shock, right? How it's difficult leaving home and going to just a foreign place. And when I got to Grambling, as I said, preparation. I already looked at the Google Maps and all of that. I was still kind of surprised by all the trees, but it kind of felt like in the middle of nowhere. And as I said, I spent 2 years in North Africa. So for me, it was like I already got that the biggest culture shock of my life previously. So coming to Grambling was a relatively, you know, easy transition. I was closer to home, although I was pretty far away from home. And starting off at Grambling, it helped having friends, helping people that you knew. So first, right off the bat, as I said, I knew Dylan. He's on the call. And he's one of the people that kind of, you know, helped me get, you know, accustomed to Grambling. He introduced me to different people like Kazim and other people, Caribbean people that he associated with. And these individuals played a huge role in me just making a smooth and quick transition into not just my classes and, you know, registering and all that stuff, but, you know, getting jobs and getting different, you know, opportunities on campus. So thanks again, Kazim and Dylan.
So, Donald, you hit something when I have to give a story first. You mentioned about the middle of nowhere. So when I first landed in Shreveport and route to Grambling, my buddies told me, man, it's like a country. There's not much around. So I got to Shreveport, which is about 1 hour, 5 minutes away. And I saw Circuit City, which is no longer existing, but back then it was a thing. I'm seeing Circuit City. I'm seeing big buildings. I'm like, my guys are, you know, them guys are tripping, man. It's not that bad. So I get into a taxi, me and a young lady, we share a taxi, which was like $50 a head. I was like, oh my God. So we get into the taxi. I'm seeing big buildings. I fell asleep. When I woke up, all I see is trees and bush. I'm like, whoa, is he trying to kidnap me or something, man? I got no money. I'm just saying. So that was my fun story. And when I finally go to the campus, I'm like, oh, okay, my buddies did not lie. It is what it is. But of course, shout out to Grambling State. I thought it was a great institution and we both had a great time. All of us went there actually. We were able to do amazing things, even though that was our starting point. So that was awesome. So Donald, let's talk about the financial part. So my philosophy is, you know, I really promote the idea of a debt-free degree. That's something I'm really big on. So tell me about, you know, the financial aspect of your decision making as far as Grambling is concerned.
Well, you know that our government, you know, they offer, you know, full scholarships and partial scholarships to go to different universities in the States. And Grambling was one that I identified where I could possibly get, you know, a full scholarship to attend. I also looked up the programs. I saw that the engineering technology program was accredited. So for me, it was almost like, well, I know, you know, someone who's over there already. So that kind of helped with the transition. It's an accredited program. And I like what I saw online. And I was going to get an opportunity to not have to pay student loans. So that was honestly one of the biggest factors in my decision.
Man, that's good. And I think something you mentioned, I want to really call out. You know, you had people who had been there before. And I tell students all the time, if you're thinking about going to an institution, think about your network. Do you know anybody who's either done that major or gone to the school you're thinking about going to? Then you thought about the finances. You said, okay, there's full scholarships, which will make it easier for me. I wouldn't need loans. So that was part of your decision-making criteria as well. The third one was accreditation. You look to see that the program you were going to do was actually accredited. And I want to just say something that I really hope, you know, aspiring STEM professionals understand. It's really not about where you go. If you're in STEM, you could go to any school once it's accredited. And once you have a decent GPA and you put in the work, you will get jobs because the demand for STEM jobs is higher than the actual supply for those jobs. So I love your decision-making format and the logic that went into deciding to attend Grambling State. What challenges, Darnell, would you say you experienced while at GSU?
Initially, I would say, as I said before, I didn't have too many challenges. I was very fortunate, if I have to be 100% honest. I got over there. I was expecting, you know, a full scholarship. And if you have not listened to Kazim's podcast on, what's the name of that podcast? I can't remember. He spoke about some of the difficulties that he faced. I never faced any of those difficulties. Everything that I expected kind of, you know, just, you know, happened. One of the challenges I would say that happened throughout my time at GSU was just, and it wasn't specifically related to GSU, it was specifically related to my status, is that certain opportunities that you try to reach out for, whether it be additional scholarships or maybe internships or certain job opportunities, you see them advertised and then you see the big, you have to be a US citizen or whatever to enroll or be accepted for whatever program that may be. And that was one of the biggest challenges, just my status and being the person that I am. I'm always looking for ways to try to improve myself and try to get exposure. And when you apply for something and you're very excited and then you get shut down, not because of, you know, your ability or anything like that, but just say where you're from, you know, that's tough. It really, you know, demoralizes you, and it's hard to overcome.
Man, I'm happy you touched on that. And you're right. That is definitely the number one challenge I think international students face when they're trying to get opportunities, that whole must be US citizen, permanent resident. And I do want, if any international students listening, I think it's also an opportunity to really realize that number one, you have to work probably 10 times harder than everybody else because you have so much less opportunity available. But I think it really speaks to your resilience and willing to press on. And again, we're going to get into this next. You were able to still find opportunities despite those challenges. So let's talk about internships. Tell us about how you approached the whole internship finding process and ultimately how you ended up landing an internship with Apple.
Okay, so once again, it comes down to the people you know and the people that know you and, you know, your circle in a nutshell. I remember on Thursday I said that to the guys on the who joined the test call that hey, if you guys are on Kazim, that's a good person to have around because, you know, he'll always kind of, you know, push you on the right path and let you know about opportunities. And when I got that internship, it was actually Kazim who reached out to me. Well, let me go back. It was Kazim who actually reached out to me and said, you know what, there's an opportunity for this Apple scholarship and internship, and you should really try it out. And yes, he told me about the opportunity. And I could have easily said, well, Apple, you know, I'm just little old me, you know, I maybe just lie about it and say, you know, hey, I applied and, you know, I just didn't get the opportunity. I went through, I filled out the application, I did all of the steps, and there was, after the initial application, there was an interview process. So I got shortlisted to the people who actually got interviewed, and actually it was two interviews. There was a kind of like a behavioral one and then, you know, more of a technical one. And eventually I got the call back that I was one of the few people who were selected, you know, for that internship. And it just stemmed from Kazim just sent me a link and said, hey, you know what, you can apply for this opportunity, something that I was not even aware of. And after he brought that to my attention, I also had to act on it and go through the process and prepare myself. And that's kind of how that whole thing went. And I, in that summer of 2016, I went out to California. I had a great opportunity to, although I felt it's intimidating some of the people that you happen to meet, because at the end of the day, we're all gifted, we're all talented, but there are some really incredible people out there. But even if you don't get, you may say, hey, this person may possibly beat me out to get whatever opportunity or whatever. You always have to think positively. Hey, I can learn something from this person. You know, I can learn from this experience. And that's what you should always try to do. Always try to learn from all of your experiences, because, you know, that will help you. You really kind of, yes, you're in a race against other people, but you are in a race of yourself. You know, you're trying to be the best version of yourself. So I just took that as an opportunity to learn as much as I could, be a sponge. And look at me now, it got me opportunity to land a job at IBM.
And that's amazing, Daniel. And you touched on so many different things. I actually want to pull the thread on some more. But I want to add some context, guys. So, you know, Daniel mentioned, I told him about the opportunity. And that opportunity, for those listening who are attending HBCUs, it was an opportunity that came with partnership with the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. And they have some partnership with Apple. And just to backtrack a little bit, when I first heard about the Thurgood Marshall College Fund, I was in Grambling. The first time I ever heard about it, I missed it. I forgot to connect with the organization. Then the following year, when I heard they were coming to campus, I was on a mission. And I'm like, I need to connect to those people. When they came to campus, when I was in the front row seat, I connected with one of the main recruiters. To this day, I have her as a friend on LinkedIn, which I chat every now and then. And then I encouraged guys like Daniel to join the organization as well. And I'll never forget, the morning I had my interview for the program, not for the Apple thing, but for the overall program, I think the very first time slot available. It was like 8 o'clock in the morning or 7:30 in the morning. Then my interview came in well-dressed, suit and tie. And I kid you not, literally, as I'm leaving the room, I'm seeing the next interview person, Darnell, right? So I said that to say, man, you know, it really brings joy to my heart when I see people I pour into actually take action. And he said it, you must take action. If people give you the information, but you don't execute on it, there'll be nothing. And I like what he said. He said he could have been intimidated and, you know, he could have said, you know, man, it's Big Apple. But man, he took a shot. You know, there's a phrase in America right now, shoot your shot, right? I mean, man, he took a shot. And I like how Michael Jordan said it. You know, you could never make the shot you don't take. You could never make the shot you don't take. Man, take it. So, I mean, try some things, man. Try to get out there. You're going to miss some. It's part of the game. But again, if you don't need to make all of them. You just need to make the right ones. So Donald, one thing I want to talk about, you were a math and engineering major going for an IT internship. How did you overcome those odds to not only get the internship, but to thrive once you got to California?
Well, in software development, it's all about, you know, thinking and solving problems. Now, one disadvantage was that I was not a CS major, as you said. I did one, maybe two computer programming classes. One was in C++. One was in, actually, I did that C++ class after. It was actually in Visual Basic. But to be successful, your best friend has to be, one of your best friends has to be Google. You know, in this day and age, you have access to so many resources that, you know, I consider myself self-taught, you know, when it comes to that space. And that's one thing that, you know, just helped me be successful, not only in that internship, but also in my role right now at IBM, just being able to go out there and find whatever information that I need, and just that yearning to just get knowledge. You know, obviously having a background in computer science does help. I'm not going to understate that. It would probably even help me even be more successful. But just my ability to just think analytically and, you know, solve problems, that was a big part of what helped in the IT space.
And good stuff, Donald. So I'm going to transition now to a going from again. You've done your internship, which was amazing. I'm going to jump into after college. So graduating and then kind of that whole process. And again, guys, again, if you have any questions as I'm going through this, just, you know, flag it and I'll get to you guys. So Donald, you graduated from college, right? Which is an exciting time. Many of us on the call have been through it at least once. So it's exciting. And I think, you know, you're thinking, you know what? I know I'm good. I expect, you know, because I know I'm good, I expect to be recruited, you know, like a free agent, you know. So tell us, you graduated, did IBM just come, you know, rolling out the red carpet for you? Or what was the process like just from initial graduation to that season of, I mean, were you employed right away? Were you unemployed for a while? Tell us to that initial, I guess, few months after graduation.
Well, I was unemployed for a while. As I said, when it comes to sometimes getting employed or getting certain opportunities, once again, your status rears its ugly head. And for some positions that I applied to, one of the biggest mistakes I made was on the application form, they said, would you require sponsorship either now or in the future or whatever it is? And just by ticking that box, you tick yes. A recruiter never sees your resume. So that was one of the biggest challenges at the time. Although my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, we had planned on getting married. At that point in time, I just figured, hey, you know, right now, you know, I'm still on F1 status. So I'm just going to answer it that way. But not knowing that was such a big hindrance. As far as IBM goes, I was looking for opportunities in the area. I'm in the Shreveport area right now. And once again, a friend, he graduated from Grambling in December 2019. So he was at Grambling. IBM went to a career fair and he saw the opportunity and he said, I'm going to apply. And he sent me a screenshot. He was like, oh yeah, I remember you're back in the area. So there's an opportunity. He sent me a screenshot and kind of similar to Kazim, I applied. I got a call back. I had a series of interviews and they went well. And one thing that helped is preparation. You always have to be prepared. Even if you go through your little, you know, ups and downs, there may be certain roadblocks, you still have to persevere because be prepared. Because for that interview, I actually have another friend. He did computer science at Grambling State and currently he's a software engineer for Chase. And I kind of spoke to him a little bit about his interview, you know, and some of the questions that he asked, because I like to talk to as many people as possible, you know, try to get the entire idea of everything. And, you know, he gave me some advice. You know, I prepared for the interview. And when I got to the interview, honestly, the guy told me that they would call me back, but he gave the feeling like I would hire you right now if I could. So that's kind of how that whole interview process went very well, and just came from, you know, preparing. And I cannot stress that enough. You just have to be prepared. I could have walked in like, yeah, I've some of these internships, you know, I did some good things in the past, but you still have to create another new impression with that person that you're meeting. So always be prepared. Kazim spoke of the elevator pitch. You have to have your elevator pitch and just be prepared. And always, always, irrespective of your past and what happened before, you always have to treat every new opportunity, you know, to the best of your ability. Just be ready, be prepared, and just take advantage of it.
Well, Donald, your interview preparation process, I like how you call it out, and I want you guys to understand. So one thing he said, that he spoke to as many people in the field, right, that he could to get the experience. You know, what was your interview like? And I think, fellas, I think that's extremely valuable. Asking them literally, what questions did they ask you, right? Ask them those questions. And I think that, and again, just doing all of Google research, I always ask students a trick question. I say, what's the best university in the world? And most of them are like Harvard, Oxford. I'm like, nah, it's Google University and YouTube University. That's the best ones in the world. And they happen to be free. So, but these have to be critical to your research process when you're trying to dominate that interview. And here's another little nugget. So my sister, who's in chemical engineering, and I've been kind of mentoring her through the process, and she's had about 3 or 4 internships actually. And I tell her, the litmus test, again, do your preparation, know your stuff. But at some point, when you feel the interview making a shift from an interview to more of a conversation, that means you and the person have connected. And once you could connect to that potential, you know, decision maker, and like Donald said, they told him, hey, I would hire you on the spot. Like, that's when you know you're crushing it. But again, initially it's awkward because, you know, you both have something you want from the meeting, right? But once you could stick with it and get to that point where it goes from just a business meeting to a conversation, and you guys connect, I'm telling you, that is the game changer. And as it was for Donnell. Go ahead, Donnell.
If I want to add something else, what also helped, and I mentioned that before, but I want to say it now, do personal projects. They say that what's the saying again? But basically, if you can go out, you can learn as much as you can learn everything in the world. But what really makes the interview process so much better is if you have a personal project that you worked on, you can show that, hey, I not only can go out and get that information, but I can apply it. And it could be something simple, any problem that you have in your daily life or just whatever it may be, just go out there and build something and kind of understand the technologies that go on. Because also on my interview, you know, the interviewer kind of asked me about, he asked us a question, and I was able to kind of apply it to a project that, you know, I created. I went online, I went on YouTube, and I'll be 100% honest. When I finished doing the project, I didn't understand probably 70%, 80% of what happened, but I went back, you know, I read some more and I kind of improved it. We talk about the iterative process. And when I got to the interview, I could really have a conversation and talk to him about what I did and make sure you understand what you're doing as well, along with having great understanding of like the fundamentals of programming. Because everyone will tell you, like, what language should I learn? Should I learn Python, C++, Java? And people will say, I can do 10 programming languages. But, you know, they're all the same. Just make sure you have a mastery of the basics. You know, you understand the basics, like, you know, conditional statements, you know, the classes, you know, the method is, you know, all of these different things that that go into all of the programming languages?
Man, that's good stuff, Daniel. And yeah, that's a very common question. Which language should I learn? And I think I like the way you address it, man. It's really about the structure. And I there's a phrase you used last week on our test call. What was it? Language agnostic. Yeah. I think again, it's being able to think, right? Being able to think. And you know, what personally drew me to the mathematical sciences was, again, solving problems, right? And computer science just takes that to another level. It's solving problems with the help of something that I could do more than my brain could do, right? So I love that. So you're in IT now, Donald. You've been at IBM for, actually, before I go there. So in that season of, before you officially got that job, I know you tried a few different things and we were talking every now and then. And I want to say, guys, when you go through these seasons of whether you're unemployed, which I've been myself a couple of times, it's very important to not try to do it on your own. And he even said it. One of his friends gave him the recommendation. And what I'm trying to say is, I tell people, you know, when we did Bible study and stuff, isolation is the enemy's favorite game. It works for Jordan and Kobe, but it might not work for us. So it's good to have a team around you when you're trying to find a job, trying to find some opportunity. Have a team of people who could help guide and coach you. Because honestly, guys, it could become depressing at times. So I want to just ask Daniel, during that unemployment season, man, what are some things you did to keep your spirits up and to just believe in yourself that even though I'm getting a bunch of rejections, my time will eventually come? Tell us about that.
Well, exercise, meditation, you know, read my Bible, maybe not as much as I should have, but, you know, did that as well. And just practice. They say something like, if we're using sports analogies, you know, you have that bench player and you waiting for when your number gets called. You just always have to be persistent and make sure that you're always trying to master your craft. I could have sat around and be like, well, you know, I did all of this stuff before and I'm not getting some of these callbacks because of, you know, my status or whatever it is. But, you know, you just have to constantly try to evolve. And Kazim, as you said, and I read in a book recently, maybe it would have helped me a little more before. I always try to be independent. You know, people are dependent. And who are independent, and we always look at independence as a good thing. And it's better to be independent than dependent. But the best thing that you can be is interdependent, you know, where you not only lean on other people, but you not only you can do your own thing, but you can also lean on other people and you have a great team around you. But sorry to go off on a tangent, but back to what you were saying, during that time, I just exercise, make sure that I was mentally, physically fit, try to keep my spirits up, and just kept on working on my craft.
Man, that's good, man. And I think...
I want to add something real quick when it comes to the interview process. Mm-hmm. Usually when you apply for a job, if you get to the stage of having an interview, that means that they look at your resume. So it's a good sign. So what you got to do is that they're not going to go beyond your resume. So you have to make sure that everything you've got on your resume, when it comes to your experience, that you know enough, because then they usually don't go beyond that. But that's what I thought, because I had an interview before and I put, you know, I was trying to apply for a programming job and I put on my resume that I work for Java, and I was totally surprised that the guy was kept on asking me questions about Java. And I'm not saying that I was super good, but I was not the best student in Java. You see what I'm talking about? So when the guy kept on asking me, how do you do this? How do you? So it was like, it was totally different from all the interviews that I had. This was like more technical. Like the guy was doing the interview for me. He was actually making sure, he was assuring that, you know, if this guy said on his resume that he was a Java tutor, because I was a Java tutor for the college that I was helping kids. So I was like, okay, well, since you said you were a Java tutor, I'm going to ask you some stuff about Java. So that's where I find out is that, and then I just understood that now is like, when you apply for a job, when they call you for an interview, that's a good sign. So don't stress too much about trying to find out about the position, because if you apply for a certain position, they have your resume. So they're calling you based on your resume. I'm not saying that don't go on Google and try to find out what the position will be, but try to focus more about, you know, your experience, make sure that when he asks you a question, you know for a fact. And that's going to save you a lot.
Man, that's some good feedback, Ulrich. And I heard a guy say it this way. Anything you put on your resume is fair game. So if you feel like you only scratch the surface, but you put it on there, it's fair game. You better be ready. You better be ready if it comes up. So that's a good call out, Ulrich. And I like what you also said. If they call you in, again, that's the first win. So yeah, man, that's some really good feedback. I love it. And I want to just piggyback on what Donnell said. I think, guys, you know, control what you can control. So again, he knew what his status was. He knew that he was applying and wasn't getting stuff as fast because he knew why. But he also realized, well, I mean, yeah, it kind of sucks, but I could control being in better health by exercising. I could control my mind by reading and studying and practicing some more. And I remember a couple of conversations with Darnell actually during that season. And he would tell me he was working on learning something new. And fellas, that is so important. Listeners also, that is so important to not just say, okay, I'm stuck. There's nothing I could do. There is always something we could do. The last piece, I think, he mentioned that his girlfriend, the time who's now his wife, you know, was personally, that's been great for me. My wife, and even before we were married, just having that support system, you know, I mean, it's been amazing. It's been just having someone you could just talk to and just share, hey, this is a challenge. But just knowing you have someone on your side, and we use sports analogy, I always tell people, teamwork makes the dream work. So again, guys, always think about that team. Who is that core team? Your core team, because that will help you navigate those storms in life. And believe me, the storms will come. I mean, they're going to come. It's whether we could weather them and be strong enough to get to the other side. So I'm going to move on, guys. Just a few more questions I have for Darnell. I call this, the first one is, Darnell, so you're in technology now. You're an admin and developer for Salesforce. Where do you see yourself in the next, say, 5 years?
Yeah, so in the next 5 years, I'm not entirely sure which path I want to go into, because in Salesforce, you know, you have multiple paths. But I'm looking at primarily maybe either being Salesforce architect or maybe going into more of the consultant path. I'm not entirely sure yet, but those are two of my main options right now.
Okay, man, sounds good. And then the last segment of this podcast, guys, like I call it passing it on to the next generation. So I'll ask just a few questions, and Daniel, we're gonna go through them pretty quickly. So Daniel, what would your advice be for minorities or underrepresented students seeking a career in technology? What advice would you give them?
Just be confident. Be confident in yourself. Make sure that you have the right circle, because it's who you know and who knows you that can give you that recommendation. And just make sure that you keep, you know, a positive mindset. A lot of times, I know that there are challenges. There are challenges as a minority, and they are real, but that's not an excuse to not be successful. So just, you know, lean on other people. There are people in the space who have been there and have done that and can definitely help you out.
Awesome, man. Knowing what you know now, what would you have done differently in college?
I think I touched on it a little earlier. I'll be a little more interdependent, not try to be so, you know, headstrong, like, you know, hey, I can do it. You know, you kind of have this feeling like I don't want to depend too much on people, but I'll be more interdependent. I would make sure I kind of grow my contacts a little more. I think I knew the right people. But even moving on after school, it would help if I did a better job of just making sure I kept certain connections and, you know, I was more outgoing. And the main thing is I was afraid to fail at times. I'll be 100% honest. In the programming space, they always say, like, you know, fail fast, you know, fail often, you know, so, you know, like, this doesn't work. So that's another big thing. Just feel fast, feel often, you know.
Good stuff. Now, just to put one more on that college thread, what other jobs did you do while you were a student? Just to give advice on, for those who are in college, just different jobs that you could do that will not be too demanding, but still let you have time to make some money and also keep, you know, on your focus on your studies.
Well, I'll just speak on myself. When I was on campus, I became a resident assistant. That was my first job. kind of like Kazim and Dylan kind of helped me on that path. And I would say from that job, I learned a lot. I learned a lot. And don't always go for, well, it would be great if you can get a job in your field. But remember I spoke about documentation and also being able to collaborate with people on teams. Those are some of the things that I had to develop when I was a resident assistant, because you always have to speak to people, you always have to write reports, and that helped me in the IT space with my soft skills. I was also a research assistant. I worked for two different professors. And once again, another, just a little tidbit, you always have to be willing to learn. I remember there was this professor, he taught my class. He said, well, both Dylan and Kazim work for him, Dr. DeRosa. And, you know, I was a freshman. I said, hey, you know what? If he has any, like, research, you know, positions, research assistant positions, he said, do you know Java? I said, I can learn. And he gave me a job. So, you know, you just have to kind of, you know, try, just put yourself out there. So I did that. And I also worked for another professor as a research assistant. So,
man, you were busy.
That's, yeah. At one point in time, I had both a research assistant position and a resident assistant position.
Man, yeah, that one, that's amazing. The next question, what's a book or resource you'd recommend to our audience?
Well, I can kind of tell, well, I'll say Google is my official resource, but some books that I've been reading recently and I made a habit of trying to read more is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill and The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I can't remember the author, but those books, yes, Covey, yes. And that book in particular kind of helped me with just my soft skills, because if you want to move forward in the technology space, you have to be able to talk to people, collaborate, and just build up those skills in addition to your programming skills. And that really takes you to the next level. And that's my one thing that I have been making a conscious effort on trying to work on. Just make sure that I build my soft skills as I grow in this field.
Awesome, man. The last question, Donald, where can people connect with you?
Well, you can connect with me on LinkedIn, and I'll also use myself as an example. Guys, when you get your first job, when you land that job, please try to continue to be active on LinkedIn. I'll be honest, and I said I like to use myself as an example. I was on LinkedIn a lot before I actually got a job, and then when I got a job, I wasn't as active. I had a whole bunch of requests and stuff like that because I was trying to focus on the task at hand, which was, you know, being a bit better developer, getting my work done. But you still have to make sure that you have to keep those connections active and continue to look to make connections. And that's something that I personally am trying to improve on, just making sure that I have the connections, because this is just the start of my career. I may stay at IBM, I may not stay at IBM. Who knows? But it's good to have different connections and know different people, because not only can they help you if you want to move out of the country, but they can also company, but they can help if you want to move up.
Great advice, man. Great advice. And I always tell people, so where you want to grow. So I think LinkedIn is a phenomenal platform for growing in the career space. So definitely, guys, invest some time, you know, get the profile up. And I personally, I'm in a similar situation to Darnell. I kind of was, once I got a job, I kind of laid back. But I'm actually getting ready to really ramp things up on LinkedIn again. So most of you, I think we're connected. You're going to see a lot of content coming up. So I'm actually getting nerdy about LinkedIn, saying, okay, what's my target audience? Who I want to connect with? And it's a fun, I like stuff like that. So I want to encourage you guys to do the same. So fellas, it's been a good podcast. Darnell, man, thank you so much for coming on. I want to give just a minute. Do we have any just last questions before I give the closing statements? Any last questions from you guys or any last comments?
My question a while ago was, how do you guys manage? But you said you use software development. I used to run grants. My thing was, how do you guys collaborate with WordPress tools? Or how do you guys manage that?
Did you get that, Donnell?
Yes, never. So he said, how do we collaborate in a nutshell? That's what you're asking.
Are you asking, Aaron, how do they collaborate code-wise to make sure one person's code doesn't get overwritten by someone else's? Is that what you're saying?
Not just overwritten, but negatively. Like, it's very easy for me to make bugs when it's like, if I'm trying to go through the whole programming cycle. Like, okay, wrote this code. Now I'm testing it. Now that didn't work. Because this has this error pop up. When you have a whole bunch of people going through that cycle, how do you guys make sure that, like, this guy's code works, this guy's code works, but when we put them together, they cause error? How do you guys collaborate? If I'm writing code, I'm not writing code more than what this guy here is writing. So that might, there might be clashes of folks. So I'm just wondering. Does that make sense?
Okay. I think I understand what you're saying. And if I don't answer correctly, just kind of, if I'm not answering your question, you can always, you know, stop me. But right now, like in Salesforce, what we're doing, a lot of it is declarative. So we don't face as many issues as, like, you know, bugs as when, like, when you write custom code. But what I will say is that when you develop in custom code, you have to understand that you have Git, you know, you have some repository, and usually you have code that works, right? And usually you have to do like a Git pull. You pull it down to your local machine, and then you make changes and all of that, and then you commit and you make your changes or whatever it is. And that's kind of how you can get an idea of, well, my code kind of mess stuff up, because you kind of working on your local branch and you have to try to fix it before you actually push it back to, you know, the master and merge it with the actual code that works.
And I think there's some value I want to make sure we capture here. So some people might hear this and wonder, what on earth is Git? Could you speak to that?
So it's just a repository, central place where you can keep all of your code. And usually, like, you have, you know, the master where you have the actual code that works, and then you have like your local version of it. Now in Salesforce, like for us and other places, I guess it do the same thing. You never develop directly on what people are using. So you have like a place that, you know, you call production, what your end users are actually using. And when you're developing, you usually pass your code or whatever it is through various environments. You may have like a sandbox where you are free to do whatever you want. If you break something, nobody's going to stress about it. I mean, your manager's not going to get mad, because, you know, that's just your sandbox where you can play, where you can do whatever you want to do. Then you have to like move those changes to another environment, like a UAT environment, where you do user acceptance testing just to see if all of the functionality works. And usually in that environment, you may have actual data that you have in your production environment to see if whatever changes that you make, sometimes they may work in the sandbox. And then when you test them with actual data, sometimes it does work. So you have to try to figure out all those things before you move it to production, where people like me and you actually get to use the things that you created. So you should have a lot of different steps where you have to deploy. We call them deployments between different environments before you get to actual production code.
Man, this is good. And again, fellas, you know, that's the value I spoke of, right? Because again, these are things we typically don't learn at the college level. I mean, a professor might mention it, but until you actually do it, it just seems very vague, right? So I remember when I was doing my internship with a company where I currently work, that was actually when I learned about the concept of multiple environments. So we have production, we have tests, we have dev. So again, the idea is you don't try something for the first time in your live production environment, because that could cost the company millions of dollars if you make a big mistake. So, and I think it has an impact for life, guys. You know, when you hear an idea, you hear someone said, oh, this worked for me. I don't think you just do it right away. You implement it in small chunks. You test it. And if it works, you implement it some more. If it doesn't work for you, maybe you move off. Some people are not breakfast people, for example. Whereas others, I see you, Daniel, whereas others feel like if I don't have breakfast, like me, my day is having a rough start, right? But some people could not eat breakfast and they could be good for the day. But you test it, find what works for you, then you optimize and make it better. And that's how we develop as, you know, as men and as people and become more productive. Back to you, Daniel.
Yeah, I want to add something before you ask another question. And even when you do deployments, one thing that you have to always be conscious of, not just in the coding sphere, but, you know, in your professional career, is always make sure that you document things. Because if you're making a deployment and you have a dependency and you don't document all of your components, trust me, somebody is going to call you at whatever time at night and say that, hey, I'm trying to deploy this. This is not working. I'm not sure why it's not working. Did you forget some of your components or did you document everything properly? And it saves you a lot. And I can tell you a lot of headache. And some of the projects I worked on were not even, some of the deployments that I have done were not as big as some deployments that other people have done. So please make sure that you document things and you always keep track of whatever changes you make.
I'm so happy you brought that up, Daniel. Guys, I want to go a step further. I think because that was something I regret I didn't do enough of when I was in Grambling at college. And just beyond just code. Actually, I remember we had a project we had put together a computerized personal trainer as one of our projects. And we were called to present that project about maybe a year later. And I had no idea what the code was. I mean, I had formatted my computer a few times, so not documenting. I mean, we had to try to fire something back up on the fly within like 3 days when it took us probably 2 months to do the first one. So it was tough. So definitely, man, you want to document as much as possible. And even from a business perspective, I mean, with the stuff I do, the academic tutoring and mentoring for people in young people in STEM, I mean, I've been doing this thing for a minute. And I realized that back in Grambling, I was already doing it, but I did not document as much as I do now. So I think advice for you guys definitely is to document the journey. All right, it sounds like we're good. So again, folks, it has been a pleasure, Daniel. I wish you all the best. And just as a reminder, as we're closing again, the whole idea of this podcast is really just to help bridge the diversity gap in technology. Minority and underrepresented students, I mean, when you look at most technology companies, they just aren't there, or technology departments. There's very low representation. So we want to help be part of the solution. Of course, we're problem solvers. Most of us are in the technology space. So definitely, man, that's the vision. So Daniel, thanks for sharing your expertise. It was definitely a pleasure having you on. I wish you all the best in your career. And also the other things you're doing. I know you have the photography business also, which we didn't really get to touch on. Maybe that's the next podcast. But yeah, it's really a pleasure. And I'm proud of you as a, you know, guys, it's really about passing it on. It's about passing it on. And I remember when Darnell came in, man, you know, his freshman year, me and Dylan were mentoring him. I remember a conversation where we said, man, we need to get this guy a job. Me and Dylan had a conversation. And man, we started executing. And I mean, to me, the most beautiful thing, guys, is the fact that when you point to people and they go further than you've gone. And that's what I mean. My first internship was with LSU, actually, in Baton Rouge. Darnell's, one of his first internships was with IBM. He went further. My first corporate America job was with a Fortune 50 company, right? Darnell joined IBM, a Fortune 50 company. I think it's actually Fortune 30. So, you know, even Dylan, I think it took me about a year to become a senior with an assistant. It took Dylan, I think, 6 months, right? So as we pour into people and we share what we know, we help them shorten the learning curve for them to get to the next level. And that's what it's about. Because when you guys win, I mean, I win too. That's why I look at it. I win. Because my broader vision, guys, is to one day, I want to be one day as an entrepreneur, career person, I want to be making business moves that are so big, I need partners with me. And who better to be a partner with me than someone that I've been investing in and seeing them go along the journey. And if you guys do the same thing, all of a sudden, we've seen a massive network just rising up of folks who are doing what we're doing, who have passions like we have, and who are all about making a difference and not just a dollar. So now I'm off my soapbox. It has been a fun time, and hopefully we get to reconnect.